Sin acknowledges and pays respect to the traditional owners of the land on which the Sin office and studios stand, the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nations. Sin also acknowledges and pays respect to the traditional owners of the lands our content reaches, as well as the radio stations we broadcast from across the country.
Welcome to Film 101, the show that looks at everything film, from the biggest new releases to award site to interviews with practitioners working on films, right through to our film recommendations. I'm your host, Arnie, and I'm joined by my fellow co-host, Darcy, and Tom will come in later in the show, basically to discuss and provide fantastic insights into the world of film and what's been happening in the last week. So thank you for coming in, Darcy.
Yeah, it's good.
So with that, I think we'll head into our first film of the day. Get it straight.
Straight into
the deep end with The Addams Family. Basically, I think a remake of sorts in an animated format of the classic Addams Family films, which I haven't seen. I'm not sure if you've
seen. It seems to pretty much be like in every like 30 years almost, because it was like originally a 60s TV show and they're like an basically iconic 90s movie, and now a 2019 animated movie, which is coming out with mixed feelings.
Yeah, well, you saw
generous
it.
To say.
You're fresh off seeing. I think that is generous to say. You're fresh off seeing it. So, what was your kind of like first impressions looking at it? Because have you seen the last couple that have come out? Or
I think the 90s movie is like vaguely in my like childhood subconscious. I think it was like vaguely on like Channel 9, Channel 10, just every now and
still
then.
Is.
Still going strong.
Because they had, like, I'm pretty sure there was a show as well, the Addams Family show that came out in the 90s as well. So it wasn't just film. Yeah, they had a show as well of it. In this one, Conrad Vernon and Greg Tiernan, I believe, they directed this one, so co-directed. It stars quite an elite cast.
Yeah, it's a ridiculous cast.
You've got Oscar Isaac in there, who plays Gomez Addams. Charlize Theron as Morticia, I believe. Morticia Addams. Chloe Grace Moritz as Wednesday Addams. Finn Wolfhard as Pugsley Addams. Nick Kroll is Uncle Fester. Snoop Dogg is It.
Not who was introduced with his own song, and then we still didn't recognize.
I still don't know.
They didn't really. His voice isn't in it, but if it is, it's like reversed. It was very strange. They played Drop It Like It's Hot to introduce him, which was very strange.
Well, it seems to make sense to just include Snoop Dogg in whatever people do these days, because
to see what happens.
Just carries it. Betty Midler plays the grandma. Allison Janney is Margot Needler. Martin Short is Grandpa Frump. And Catherine O'Hara is Grandma Frump. The film is... Look, in terms of animations...
The size says a lot.
In terms of animations, you've got Frozen 2 that's out right now, and then you've got this. I think if you're going to be taking your kids to see an animated film, this is a bit more on the grim side, even though it isn't animation.
Yeah.
Like, I think it's still got, like... At least visually, it seems still a bit more, like, grim.
Yeah, well, I feel like it's a hard thing to toe with, like, Addams Family as, like, a kid's product, because they kind of have to lean into the really, like, morbid kind of humor. They have to use a lot of the, like, dark, like, themes that they don't really touch on in any substantial way that would be interesting, like the way Inside Out touches on more adult themes. And, yeah, like, the way it looks is... just very one note for quite a lot of it.
Yeah, I think that's that forms part of it. The fact that there are so many different things that it tries to address.
Yeah,
I put here. There's too many kind of subplots in there, like that it deals with. There's like a Pugsy subplot and kind of
trial. Where it's like essentially like him having a bar mitzvah.
Yeah, something
sort of
like
thing.
That.
He had, like, he had to read the menorah and had to do a sword fight. Yeah,
and that's the reason for the family's kind of reunion. How they kind of unite. There's also another subplot in there of Wednesday and her kind of exploration of a world beyond what she knows, so outside the confines.
That was really, like, the heart of the movie.
Yeah, it was.
Which, like, ended up only being, like, 30% of it. I think, which, like, it clearly felt like that was the plot. And they kept just, like, branching out into other things where it's like, this is obviously... Like, Chloe Moretz is the standout of this movie, and I think they give her the most to work with. And I think she puts the most effort in, to be honest, out of the entire cast.
And her character is still the most kind of, like, you know, like, bland in some sense. Like, she doesn't speak... Like, she's just really toned down in that sense. Mm.
That just goes back to, I think, like, the humor of this movie is, like... The Addams Family is weird and spooky.
Weird and, quirky.
And, like, you can only do that for so long, even though this movie is, like, 80 minutes.
88, I believe. Yeah. But, yeah, like you said, Wednesday, she is kind of the heart of the film. And a lot of, like, how they centered around her, I feel like, and obviously the family, it would have made a bit more sense, but she's kind of, her wanting to branch out inevitably leads us to Margot and that
yeah.
kind of antagonist.
Yeah, and there's like a really
subplot.
Interesting like social commentary of, they named this town that's like, basically everything around the Addams family's haunted house is called the town of Assimilation.
Yeah, yeah
which
yeah.
is like very on the nose, like use of theme, but like it was really interesting, but then they just didn't do a whole lot with it. There was like a whole, there's kind of a subplot of like the parents of children in this town using social media to spread fake news about people. And it's like, there's something really interesting in here. And for like a kid's movie that is parents have to see with them, I kind of like that they have to see this thing, but I feel like they played it in a way that you don't actually see yourself in any character, so you don't see what they're doing and reflect on what you're doing.
Well, I think it would have made more sense to do something like that on an SNL skit rather than this sort of
yeah.
thing.
Yeah, I also think kind of company, maybe like other animated movies like Inside Out, like Pixar movies, probably could have handled that same sort of subject matter in a more interesting way.
Yeah, because they, well, when you're mentioning Inside Out, they play it around, like it's simple in the way that they go about addressing those kind of larger than life themes that,
yeah.
that can be hard to really kind of like narrow down.
Mm.
Whereas this, it dabbles in so many different aspects
yeah.
that it never really, like you never know what to kind of focus on in the moment.
Mm. It kind of feels like a TV show almost. It's kind of like a pilot to a animated TV show where they're trying to introduce an entire cast of like 10 people that all have their own story.
Well, that
and
seems
kind
to
of,
be it.
Yeah, and like everyone has their own kind of character arc that would play out over an entire season of television that they're trying to cram
yeah.
into 80 minutes.
I think that, and then you've got like the closing, in the closing sequence, like right after the film's done, actually,
yeah.
you've got that like weird little item number where it's like, you know, that they're doing it, the
yeah.
ba-dum. Like it's that. And
yeah,
it's
the iconic
like,
song that they do like literally as karaoke. And then
yeah.
probably the biggest laugh that I had for the entire movie, which I think was supposed to be a comedy, but we'll find out, is after the karaoke is the new song of the Addams Family, which is performed by Migos. And
yeah.
that was very strange.
Well, there's that there's that one, and there's a Christina Aguilera one called Haunted Heart, which we are going to play in a bit. But yeah, they've got those kind of two songs. It's not the main theme that runs through. And the way that they've kind of discovered the main theme, like it was, do you know what I mean?
I feel like they knew they had to get to
the main song
and the clicking, but they didn't really know how to get there.
That seems to be the reason why this film exists. Let's just like let's just go towards that point, and then
yeah.
like everything else is just, you know, good fortune.
Yeah.
Everything else that comes in between. We haven't actually addressed the plot. So in terms of the plot, well, I think we've addressed a fair bit. But in terms of the plot, the eccentrically macabre family moves to a bland suburb where Wednesday Addams's friendship with the daughter of a hostile and conformist local reality show host exacerbates conflict between the families.
That's a good summary.
That's an overly well. It's a good summary.
It's well written.
Overly convoluted for a children's film. But yeah, like when I'm comparing what's out there right now in terms of animation, we spoke about Frozen 2 last week. I still think that's more fitting if you're going to take your kids to it.
Yeah. Well, I do question like the placement of when they put this movie out into cinemas.
Yeah.
Like they're putting it out the week after Frozen, and like that's kind of the move for lower budget movies that they don't expect to do well. It's just like,
I feel like
hope
it's
for the best.
I feel like it's a January sort of release. I feel like that's when it should have come out. Because what do you
yeah.
have in January that's coming out that's big? Like Bad Boys 2, and that's pretty
like
much...
like the second month of Star Wars. Like that's your...
Oh, well, yeah.
Well,
it's still going to be dominating. That's right. In terms of the critical scores, it's received 5.9 on IMDb, 43% on Rotten Tomatoes, and 46% on Metacritic. So it seems to be all over the shop in terms of... there seems to be a general consensus that it's not a great
yeah.
film. Even the animation seems a bit like we'll talk about this before the show, like how we compare Disney animations to something like DreamWorks. You know, there's
yeah.
always there's
or even
always,
like the Sony with
yeah.
Into the Spider-Verse. Like,
there's a different sort of style, and I think there's like a general. I think there's a how do I put it? An expectation now in terms of what we kind of expect from the bigger tier animations.
Yeah,
and this kind of falls short of that. Like at points, yeah, it was quite.
Yeah, it's like visually, it's just not... There just isn't that much interesting to look at. So you're more focused on what's happening, and then what's happening is also lacking that you kind of...
Well, I think the house in and of itself, had they, because that's its own kind of entity. Like, yeah, the house is its own being. And I feel like the suburbs surrounding it, like that town surrounding it, that's really bland, whereas the house is like kind of what was interesting to me. I feel like there's so much going on there that they could have focused on, and maybe, you know, because there's the tree in there as well, that tree that kind of moves around. Like, I feel like if they'd focused more on those sort of little things in terms of what the house means and for this family and how they kind of operate, you know, together, I feel like that would have made it a bit more interesting rather than taking it out of that house and then, you know, looking at this really underdeveloped subplot.
Yeah, yeah.
And at the same time, it's not written that great. Like, you've got an elite cast written down, yeah, but like, they don't have much to work with.
Yeah, and you can kind of feel that they're not putting a lot into it.
Because they probably don't have to.
Because even like the main cast isn't even like using... Like, because I feel like a lot of, like, voice acting for celebrities, like, large-scale actors, they either, like, put on a voice or, like, try to not sound like themselves almost, but a lot of these actors just kind of do themselves almost.
Yeah, well, I mean...
I mean, Oscar Isaac does, a more exaggerated Latin American accent. I think that's the closest.
I guess if you're going into this not knowing who was the cast, then that would probably make more sense if they're not over-exaggerating everything. But, like, in terms of that, like, Oscar Isaac and Charlize Theron recorded their lines separately and did not actually meet until they did the press for the movie, which seems to be a recurring thing for animations. I know Michael Douglas mentioned there's that the Green Eggs and Ham show on Netflix now. He mentioned he never saw the cast until they started, like, he recorded his lines separately. He enjoyed doing it, but, like, they just recorded the lines separately and then put it together, and then that's it.
Yeah.
And I think that takes away from that more intimate kind of feel where actors are bouncing off of each other for reactions. I think that's really like flatlined.
Yeah. Almost. And I think that's what made a movie from a couple of years ago, Sausage Party, really interesting, which is made by the same people with Seth Rogen and that whole crew with Evan Goldberg. And I think that movie, you could feel the chemistry of all the actors because of how close they all are. You could kind of feel that they probably recorded them all at the same time.
And they probably enjoyed doing it, which is not to say that these guys didn't enjoy doing it, but it just doesn't feel as kind of natural in that.
Yeah, because I feel like with voice acting, you kind of have to over exaggerate the chemistry if it's like not there in the writing.
Yeah,
yeah.
Any final thoughts on the Addams Family, Darcy?
Maybe try and find the '90s movie.
Try to or the '90s show.
It might be on Channel 7 at the moment.
It'll be odd soon enough. I think it was actually recently in preparation for this one. So there you go. You're listening to the Film 101 podcast on Sin. We're going to head into our second segment of the day, looking at Jeremy Clapin's I Lost My Body, a Netflix film and another Netflix animation at that, 2 weeks in a row. Yeah, Tom, I know you're pointing at yourself.
Yeah, yeah. Are you not going to introduce me?
Oh, well, I did introduce you. I said you'd come in. I think it was expected that you'd be in for this segment because I think you liked this film, Tom. Am I correct?
Yeah, yes, I did actually very much enjoy I Lost My Body. It was quite an interesting experience, actually, because it's this adult-oriented story, but at the same time, it doesn't. Like, it's really hard to describe the kind of feelings that I went through watching this movie.
It's a mature animation, I think.
It's like an existential animation.
Yes. A really kind of deep one. I don't think this is made for children.
No, it's definitely not.
Oh, no. But I feel like the animation is probably the only sort of platform they could have gotten this, especially for Jeremy Clapin, if he's looking at making a film like this, you know, to record a hand on its own, he would have had to go through some kind of live-action animation procedure, which probably would have cost a bit more.
Wouldn't have looked as...
It probably good. Wouldn't have...
And, the scenes with the hand are some, like, one of the most interesting, like, gripping action sequences of the year, I reckon.
Yeah,
legitimately.
No, seriously, that is what amazed me as well, is the fact that they extrapolate so much tension from this seemingly charming, innocuous story about a hand trying to find its way back across the city.
It's its own personality in some way. And for some reason, I don't know why, and I was thinking of, like, Pickle Rick from Rick and Morty.
Yeah, no, less of that, like, comedic vibe because it's not comedic.
Not made.
But, like, there are a lot of, like, action sequences that are very akin
to
that
sort
of thing.
Like, with the rats and that? Yeah. That was just coming to mind.
Yeah, there's a scene with pigeons in this that, like, I was... Like, hard in my throat. Yeah.
I was not expecting that.
And I think the score had, like, a lot to do with that as well.
It definitely intensifies the feel, like the score in this one. The film basically stars, at least in the English translated version, Dev Patel as Nofel, and Alia Shawkat is pretty much Gabrielle, and two stellar actors, you know, at that, together. I don't know whether they were together in the recording rooms, but yeah, like, they definitely add a new layer to this. I know, Dicey, you saw it, the French version as well as this
one. Yeah, because Netflix, they offer every version. So they basically had this, they bought this movie from Cannes start of the year, so in their French language. And then after buying it, they dubbed it in German, Italian, and English. I think Spanish as well.
They've done it a fair bit,
and I think the English version, I think just like the actual quality of the actors is much better than the French version. I think the chemistry between the leads in the French version is a lot more detached.
And it's two of the most emotionally driven kind of actors, especially in terms of their performances. Like,
yeah, like it really holds it together. Yeah, I think I much prefer the English version, which I feel bad saying as like a...
Well, I mean, in terms of the plot, according to Netflix, so a young love blossoms, a lost hand embarks on a perilous journey, and a dreamlike adventure unfolds in the streets of Paris. It is very much two interconnecting, how would I put it? I guess timelines. It's not the same sort of timeline. Mm-hmm. It's a hand kind of coming back to this boy who's lost it in an accident, I believe.
It's almost a non-linear narrative, you could say.
Yeah.
Yeah, in some sense. What part of it kind of intrigued you guys the most? Was it the hand, or the hand's journey, or was it...
It was the hand's journey for me, honestly.
So I really liked how well they kind of like collided, like scene to scene, where it was like essentially like a rom-com for one half the movie and an action thriller for the other half. And they, I don't know, just every time they flow back, I really liked both sections, that I didn't want to leave either one.
Well, it's like you're watching two different films happen.
Yeah.
And I don't know, like when they do finally meet, like there's a sense of relief, but there's also a sense of, you know, like at least it ties into the messages of kind of wanting to let go of things and kind of move forward. I feel like that's really the an undertone of the film, learning to kind of move forward and how we learn to move forward through our experiences, be it negative or positive, with the hand being a negative, you know, what will happen, the negative experience. But, you know, it's got a life of its own in some ways. So you still feel sympathy.
Yeah, I think it's really important that the movie is titled "I Lost My Body" and not "I Lost My Hand." It's really a story about the hand finding the body, and not the other way around.
Yeah. Well, in terms of the critical scores, it's received 7.7 on IMDb, 96% on Rotten Tomatoes, and 81% on Metacritic. Mm. So yeah, it's been lauded by critics, and it's been hailed by some. I know, like David Orlich has said, you know, it's probably the best animation of the year, in his opinion.
Yeah. But well, won the Critic Awards at Cannes.
It won the Critics Week Grand Prix.
Mm. Mm.
That's correct. And also, it was nominated for the Golden Camera at Cannes as well. Mm. But why is it, and I know we'll get into this more later, but why is it being snubbed at the Globes?
Well, simply because it's a foreign animation. And there was pretty
good enough, Tom. There was
pretty heavy competition. Let's face it, from the likes of Pixar, Toy Story 4, DreamWorks of How to Train Your Dragon 3, and there was another Disney movie in there.
And Missing Link, which was one of the most heavily campaigned movies of the year.
Oh, yes.
That's absolutely. Why.
And it bombed at the box
foreign
office.
Foreign press is as corrupt as any organization, which we'll get to later.
We will get to later.
Yeah, the most amazing part about Darcy's statement is I'm not disagreeing with him.
neither am I, but we do have a lot to discuss in terms of our hate for the people running these awards. So the story here is basically loosely based on the novel Happy Hand by Guillaume Laurent, I believe, whose credits include the screenplay for Amélie, which is interesting.
It's like one of the most beloved French films ever.
Yeah. It also spent around 7 years in production, with the first talks of adapting the original book taking place in 2011.
Yeah, we should mention this is based on a graphic novel.
Mm. Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah.
According to Jeremy Clapland, so the film's director, the film is, quote-unquote, an urban modern fairy tale about destiny and resilience. It tells us that, to change things, we must surprise ourselves. We must dare to do something unusual and stay away from the straight and narrow.
Mm.
I think the film achieves those messages.
I mean, it definitely does in the rom-com segment. I don't know whether it necessarily does that in the hand segment, really.
I don't know how much of that statement is directed towards the hand as well. maybe we could be looking a bit too deep into that. I'm not too sure.
Well, I think that was the problem. I looked at the hand story too deeply. I thought it might have been one of those allegorical messages or tales, but no, it was literally a hand who was trying to get back to his owner.
That's pretty much the gist of the film.
Yeah.
And I guess, you know, it's also won an audience award for Best Feature at the Annecy International Animated Film Festival and a Crystal Award for Best Feature. It won Best Original Music for Dan Levy at the Stages Catalonian International Film Festival, and it won the Stork d'Or for Best Animated Feature at the Strasbourg European Fantastic Film Festival. So it's got some nice accolades. And,
I'm pretty confident it's going to get nominated at the Oscars. I have confidence in their actual voting body of animators.
If we've seen, if the Golden Globes are any indication, we got 6 nominations for Marriage Story, 5 nominations for The Irishman, both Netflix productions.
And two Popes, which is Netflix as well.
It's looking like if those nominations are any indication, then the Academy will look favourably upon My Body.
American Factory, another Netflix movie, is almost definitely going to win the documentary. It's by far the best documentary of the year.
Mm.
It's a big year for Netflix.
Yeah, so we're going to hit... Well, before we do, want to say something. I need to get it off my chest. I think that even though we know the character has lost his hand, seeing that scene in which we discover how he did lose that hand, it still hits you.
It's spine-tingling. Because they play it because they know.
Yeah.
Everyone knows what's about to happen, and they're just kind of, toying with you.
Mm.
Yeah.
I was looking away the whole time. I'm like, just get it over with.
No, I had to do exactly the same thing. I had to physically walk away from my computer and listen for the sound of the hand being chopped off before I went, okay, I can go back to it now.
Spoilers, Tom.
Yeah. And for an animated movie, I feel like I don't have this kind of response very often.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that being that a lot of animated films are directed at younger audiences.
Yeah.
So this, and I think Spider-Verse in some sense, were really jarring films, at least Spider-Verse in terms of,
it's visuals. Yeah.
It's visuals, but also, the fact that they kill off Spider-Man, surprise, surprise. A lot of really daring animations in recent years.
Yeah, I felt it more akin to maybe BoJack Horseman, which I feel like is a big reason why Netflix picked it up because of how successful that show is.
Probably has some ties to it. You're listening to the Film 101 podcast on Sin. We are going to head into our final segment of the day. And we've dedicated a fair bit of time to this one because there is a lot to get through and only so much time in the world. Mm. So we'll head straight into it. So the Golden Globes nominees were basically announced in the last, 10 hours, in the last night?
Yep.
There's been some shocks here, a bit of talk as well going on from filmmakers alike. Marriage Story basically topped with 6 nominations, followed by The Irishman and Once Upon a Time in Hollywood with 5 each. I think that's worth addressing because 2 of those films are Netflix films, and it's going to be a crazy year for Netflix at the awards.
Mm.
Tom Hanks will also be receiving a Lifetime Achievement Award, the Cecil B. DeMille, at the Golden Globes as well. Is that long overdue, or is that perfect timing for him?
No, I think it's long overdue, honestly.
It's interesting that he's getting nominated for a film as he's getting this award.
Yeah, that is interesting, actually.
I think that doesn't happen that often.
But then again, they tend to give these awards out when people are in the twilight of their careers, and I think that Tom Hanks has easily got another 10 years ahead of him.
Oh, yeah.
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 From your mouth to Tom Hanks's ears, Tom.
Yes.
So we've
got to stick together, our fellow Toms.
So for Best Motion Picture in a Drama, these were the nominees: The Irishman, Marriage Story, 1917, Joker, and The Two Popes. What are your guys' thoughts on the 5 films under drama?
Well, I think my thoughts on Marriage Story are well known. I don't think I need to repeat them here, but just in case people aren't aware, I was not fond of Marriage Story. I thought it was just the whitest, most unrelatable movie ever. It just didn't do anything for me. But funny story, actually, I was hanging out with a mate of mine just before, went back to their flat, and their housemate was actually watching Marriage Story. And I was just like,
good taste.
Oh. I thought the exact opposite.
I was just sneaking it in.
It's a sign, Tom.
Yeah, but as for The Irishman, I think that's pretty much a given. Joker, a little bit of a surprise, given the amount of backlash it received.
It's a fair bit of surprise, in
my opinion. The Two Popes I only heard about just recently, but I am actually looking forward to seeing that.
It's essentially this year's Green Book, I think. It's like the dad movie of... two old guys having a great time, not talking about the difficult things that they probably should be talking about in a movie about two popes. But
that's true. But we've also got that idea. So we've got, because it's about Pope Benedict the 16th.
Yeah, and Pope Francis.
And Pope Francis before he obviously became Pope. And sort of contrasting the two of them, one's obviously more conservative, one's more progressive. He often is argumentative, and yet somehow the two are friends. It's
yeah,
quite intriguing. 1917, obviously, it hasn't had a wide release here yet. Many of the early reviews I've read are that it's technologically spectacular.
Well, it's essentially a one-shot World War One movie shot by Roger Deakins, possibly the greatest cinematographer of all time. Mm-hmm. Like, that's essentially the pitch for the movie.
Yeah, that's it. And the rest of it, it's just, you know, same old war movie.
Yeah.
So apart from that one-shot thing.
But that's what doesn't excite me, the fact that, yeah, it is just another kind of war film.
Well, yeah.
I mean,
like, it is interesting that, we'll get to it later, but Sam Mendes getting nominated for Best Director for this movie as well, kind of legitimizing the whole film instead of just Deakins.
Mm.
And Tom, you mentioned Marriage Story. You're kind of, yeah, not too fond of. What do you think deserved a nomination in its place in terms of for drama?
What movies have come out this year? So there's the problem. There's just been so many movies which have come out in this past year, and you just can't narrow it down like this.
I guess there's been talk of something like The Farewell. I'm not saying that in terms of this.
Yes, The Farewell. The Farewell definitely deserved to be on there, and it's an absolute shame that it's not.
Do you guys think that these categories need to be expanded? I know we've seen it with the Oscars for Best Picture. They have 7 to 8 films.
It sort of is expanded in a way, because it's separated into drama and musical or comedy.
They've been doing that for a while now.
Yeah.
They've been doing that the entire time, and the reason is they wanted to do what the Oscars tried to do and expand their audience, you know, make it appeal to more people.
And also bring in more A-listers.
True.
Yeah, which is their main drive.
Yeah. I would have cut Joker out of there. I haven't seen the two popes, so I can't comment on that. But yeah, I would have cut Joker.
I think this nomination kind of legitimizes Joker as like a serious Oscar contender, I think it is.
Sorry, I'm just looking through the rest of the nominations now. I can also see on here Ford v Ferrari.
Was a weird omission.
Little Women, Bombshell, also nominated in the other drama categories. Like, I reckon those movies easily would have deserved a place over Joker.
And I think they're more likely to get into the Oscars than here.
Yes.
Yeah.
For Best Motion... Oh, actually, I might as well ask, what do you guys think is going to win for Best Motion Picture in drama?
Irishman.
I think it's a two-way race between the two main Netflix movies.
Yeah, it's going
to
be...
I think the Hollywood Foreign Press Association, they're going to lean more towards, like, honouring, that's the word, the old guard. So I think it's going to go towards Scorsese.
Well, think about it. Actually, I'd be wrong if I said this, but because Green Book won last year, the Best Picture...
At the Oscars,
At the Oscars. But, yeah, I'd always think that whatever wins in drama tends to be something that would win at the Oscars, like would win Best Picture, even though
The people that run these two, like, their films, they kind of, mainly for the musical comedy section, they kind of run it in that section knowing that it's an easier group to win most of the time.
But this year, I mean, we'll get into the nominations in a moment, but this is a pretty strong field in the musical or comedy category. Like, any one of these movies deserves to win.
And those films being, so this is for Best Motion Picture Musical or Comedy, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, Jojo Rabbit, Knives Out, Rocket Man, and Dolomite Is My Name. We've discussed most of those films on the show, save for Rocket Man and, I believe, Jojo Rabbit, which I know Tom has seen. I think we've all kind of seen Rocket Man as well, I believe. What are your guys' thoughts on this category in here? The films that are up for nomination.
Was this the first time Tarantino's been in the comedy category?
Yeah, that I found that intriguing as well. I thought he'd be leaning more towards the drama category. Yeah,
but I think it's for the easy win, which I think it has in this section.
It probably will.
As good as Knives Out, Dolomite, and Jojo are.
Let's be honest though, like, movies like Knives Out and Jojo, they're these real indie releases, and whereas Once Upon a Time in Hollywood has the backing of a studio behind it, so it's almost certain.
I mean, Knives Out is a really big budget. Jojo Rabbit's the only independent movie of the 10.
It is, but Knives Out is a Lionsgate movie, and they don't have the same amount of money that Columbia Pictures does.
Yeah, that's true.
What do we think is winning in this category?
Tarantino.
Yeah, Tarantino.
Because that's the only other, I think, front runner for Best Picture at the Oscars, of like, besides The Irishman and Marriage Story.
Have we had a year where it's been Tarantino and Scorsese for Best Picture?
From memory,
not the same year.
Django was 2012 or 2013?
I don't think it was the same year as Wolf of Wall Street.
Yeah, Django was 2012, Wolf of Wall Street was 2013.
Yeah.
Okay, so we haven't... from what I understand, had and the two, which would be fascinating to see because they are, it's ridiculous. So, best performance by an actor in a motion picture drama: Christian Bale for Ford v Ferrari, Antonio Banderas for Pain and Glory, Adam Driver for Marriage Story, Joaquin Phoenix for Joker, and Jonathan Pryce for The Two Popes. Which is ironic for him, seeing as he was the dude in he was the scepter or whatever it was in Game of Thrones, Jonathan Pryce.
He's not. He hasn't just been in Game of Thrones.
Come I know, but he's been typecast now in these sort of roles. So that's just. But yeah, it's a crazy field seeing these five names on here. What do you guys think of this matchup?
It's a surprisingly young group.
It is a young group. I think that Antonio Banderas might be the oldest one on there.
Jonathan Pryce.
Beg your pardon.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes. Oh dear. it is not my day today.
Adam Driver's the youngest on there.
He is, and I think he's going to walk away with it, honestly.
I hope so.
I mean, that scene of him screaming at Scarlett Johansson is probably going to be the clip they play, and then everyone's just going to go, all right, that's it. Yep. Winner decided.
Dude, I'm really on the fence between him and Antonio Banderas right now. Because Banderas, the guy won at Cannes, so he's...
And this is the tricky part, because it's the Hollywood Foreign Press Association. So do they go for the foreign name in Antonio Banderas?
They haven't in the past.
Or do they go for the Hollywood name?
But we have to... I have to say it now, the Hollywood Foreign Press is the worst group of... I don't know the most... There are 90 people in this group
that
vote for all of this, and we put them above every other award show besides the Oscars.
We've had this discussion on Film 101 before, I believe, about how the Hollywood Foreign Press Association.
I think it was me.
it's just this mishmash of random people. It's not people who are in the film industry, like the Academy or the Critics Circle
They prove once a year that they're still actively writing. Mm. They basically get audited to prove they're still film writers.
Well, they should do every year. They should just revamp, get new people in every year, so you can have different sort of opinions.
And which
through.
Is what the Academy has been doing.
Yeah. Mm. But here, last year, so at the last Oscars, we had Rami Malek won for Best Actor, whereas at the Globes last year, and I believe, I'm not sure if it was for drama. I don't know whether
he won for drama.
Did he win for drama?
Yeah.
Did he?
Because Bohemian Rhapsody won drama, which is, how well is that age, right?
Christian Bale won for Vice. In
Oh, that's right. Yeah. He was in the comedy category. But isn't that strange? I mean, the movie, which is a musical, is competing in the drama category.
It's odd because now we've got, Rocketman's in there as well. So we've had
Which is a proper musical. Yes.
Yeah, I know, but we've had two films based on big artists from the time, so that have made back-to-back appearances at these big awards. Mm. So I think that's an indication of what we're going to kind of be seeing in the coming years as well, in terms of the sort of films that are going to come through. I think it's either between Banderas and Driver in there. Honestly,
I think Joaquin has a pretty good shot. I think it's the only movie I think of this entire nomination list that made $1 billion and has $1 billion worth of people that saw this movie.
If that's all that it's riding on, though,
the whole movie is riding on him being great, which he is.
Well, like I said before, Tom, as well, it's like saying water's wet. I mean, the dude's, we know the dude's great. Driver or Banderas, I think it'd be a crime not to give it to one of them, if I'm going to be honest, as much as I love Phoenix. Mm. And he has deserved to win in the past for certain roles that he's been
in. Do you think there'll be rioting in the streets if he doesn't win? Joker style.
Do you reckon he's going to be the one?
They won't know
the
why they're rioting because it wasn't written.
He's going to be the one leading the charge as well with his Joker attire. Mm. So we're going to move on to the best performance by an actress in a motion picture drama. We have Cynthia Erivo for Harriet, which I don't think any of us have seen.
It hasn't been released yet.
Scarlett Johansson for Marriage Story. Saoirse Ronan for Little Women.
Saoirse.
She's been forcing us to say her name right.
Oh God!
Well, 10 years.
That's
now.
How I've always said it. Charlize Theron for Bombshell and Renee Zellweger for Judy. What do we think here?
Well,
I think this one's pretty tight.
We haven't seen Little Women yet, though.
The only movie that I've seen on here is Marriage Story. I've heard lots of great things about Renee Zellweger's
She's
performance.
Been campaigning for 3 months now.
Yeah,
for this award.
Yeah, I think that the person who definitely deserves it most is Cynthia Erivo, simply because, she came from nowhere last year and appeared in two fantastic movies with two really phenomenal performances.
Mm.
And here she is, nailing it here in Harriet. So,
Well, I mean, I think Scarlett Johansson, based on what I've seen, Little Women we're seeing this week, and Bombshell I'll be seeing this week, so I'll have a bit more informed perspective in terms of those.
The Charlize Theron, from what I've heard, is, the most ridiculous like transformation into a real person that's almost ever happened.
And she's seen the trailer. She barely looks like Charlize Theron.
No, yeah, because she's playing Megyn Kelly, which is slightly problematic, depending on...
She has discussed this, actually, in doing our press rounds for the movie, is the fact that she's playing this person who's not the most... Problematic
morals.
She has some problematic morals. Thank you, Darcy, for saving me there. And here she is playing essentially a hero or protagonist in this movie.
Then we've got Best Performance by an Actor in a Motion Picture, Musical, or Comedy. We've got Daniel Craig for Knives Out, Roman Griffith Davis for Jojo Rabbit, Leonardo DiCaprio for Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, Taron Egerton for Rocket Man, and Eddie Murphy for Dolomite Is My Name.
Leo.
You reckon?
It has to be Leo. He always wins at the Globes.
Honestly, like, these performances aren't great besides DiCaprio.
No, whoa.
I haven't seen The Child in Jojo Rabbit.
I think that all of these performances are great. I mean, Daniel Craig's so much fun in Knives Out. Roman Griffith Davis, this is his film debut, Jojo Rabbit.
Yeah.
And he is absolutely wonderful. Really convincing.
I think Daniel Craig, as great as he was, I don't know whether we can match him up that much in terms of, you know, how convincing his performance was, maybe compared to DiCaprio.
I honestly think this is just a nomination to get James Bond at the awards.
I
honestly don't think he's that great in Knives Out in terms of, like, actually being a great acting performance. I think he's hilarious in it.
Yeah, I think that's what it was.
Remember, it's musical or comedy.
Eddie Murphy as well. I think he was quite great in Dolomite Is My Name.
Yeah.
I thought he really bought into the source material, as we've mentioned. I thought he was really in tune with that. Got the most out of it. But yeah, I'm seeing DiCaprio winning here as much as the others were convincing.
If Taron keeps bringing Elton John to events, I feel like he actually could have a pretty good shot, but see how that goes.
Elton John's going to be campaigning for him.
He has been.
Has he?
That's been going for since the movie came out in April. They've been campaigning ever since.
It'd be great to see, though, if Edgerton did win, whether Elton John were going to
came up with him.
Just came up.
Took the award.
That'd be a great twist, wouldn't it? Elton John's been acting as Elton John this whole time.
To a Marlon Brando.
Best performance by an actress in a motion picture, musical, or comedy. Awkwafina for The Farewell. Ana de Armas for Knives Out. Cate Blanchett for Where'd You Go, Bernadette. Beanie Feldstein, I believe, for Booksmart, and Emma Thompson for Late Night.
Oh, there is three more movies right there which would have been much better than Joker in the category. I mean, the Farewell we've discussed, but Booksmart, really great coming-of-age movie.
Yeah.
Late Night, really fun rom-com. I mean, and, you know, all of these performances deserve the win, honestly.
That's the problem. Not everything can win. I mean...
I'd love Awkwafina to win.
Yes, I think
like,
she
as
won...
basically the only representation of The Farewell, one of the best movies of the year.
Yeah, absolutely. And she did win at the Gotham Awards, I believe.
Yeah, she's getting a lot of love.
Yeah.
I think
for
she...
a movie that Lulu Wang should be getting nominated for this.
But Beanie Feldstein in Booksmart, she really carried that movie as well. So
yeah,
I think
definitely.
She's equally deserving of praise.
Then we've got Best Performance by an Actor in a Supporting Role in a Motion Picture.
The old man category.
It's a crazy category.
The senior citizen.
Crazy. Tom Hanks for A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood. Anthony Hopkins for The Two Popes. Al Pacino for The Irishman. Joe Pesci for The Irishman. And Brad Pitt for Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. This is tough, isn't it?
That is.
Okay, my money's heading towards Al Pacino for reasons we've previously discussed here on Film 101.
Well, he won at the Hollywood Film Awards as well.
He did too.
For supporting, and I'm seeing Pacino here. As much as I loved Brad Pitt in Once Upon a Time, I haven't seen.
I've been hearing amazing things about Tom Hanks as Mr. Rogers.
Yeah,
though.
That movie doesn't
and
come
like, that's
out
like
here.
One of the best casting matches I think I've ever heard of.
Yeah, it doesn't come out here until mid-January.
Yeah.
It's been in the US for like weeks or even months now.
And from the sound of things, he carries the whole film.
He does, yes.
So there's been a lot of performances that have carried films this year as well.
As a supporting, yeah.
So what are we saying here? Pacino?
Pacino.
Darcy?
Pacino or Pesci? But I'd love to see Tom Hanks get a double award as a lifetime advert.
I wouldn't want Pesci to win purely because he's just going to give the flat-out simple answer.
I don't know if he's going to turn up.
Well, that's the thing.
He might do a Judi Dench and just win 8 Emmys and not turn up to any of them.
Then we've got best performance by an actress in a supporting role in a motion picture. We've got Kathy Bates for Richard Jewell, Annette Bening for The Report, Laura Dern for Marriage Story, Jennifer Lopez for Hustlers, and Margot Robbie for Bombshell. Also a pretty strong group here, I'm not going to lie.
It is a very strong group.
Annette Bening did
group.
Not do a lot in The Report. That's a really strange
And also,
I think it's her name that's kind of getting her into that. She doesn't do a lot in that movie.
And also, we haven't covered the report here on Film 101, but can I just say, really ordinary?
It's pretty good.
I didn't see it. No, I just, as far as like war dramas go and political backroom shenanigans, it just didn't do anything for me.
So what are we saying here?
Laura Dern, she won, I think it was at the Gotham Awards again.
She's won quite a bit already, I think, for this performance.
Yeah, so she is getting a lot of love for her performance, and I imagine that it will go her way. With that said, Jennifer Lopez, potentially?
Also, I think...
She had a lot of hype.
The Golden Globes comes out in January.
Early January.
So I think this comes out just before J-Lo does the halftime show at the Super Bowl, which is the largest, I think, Oscar campaign strategy of all time, which I love.
Yeah, that's going to be huge.
And I would love if she won because they watched the halftime show. It's like, we should invite her. She seems cool.
Now we've got Best Director in a Motion Picture. Bong Joon-ho for Parasite, Sam Mendes for 1917, respect. Todd Phillips for Joker, Martin Scorsese for The Irishman, and Quentin Tarantino for Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Parasite? Where's the love for Parasite?
It's actually not allowed to compete in the other two awards because it's foreign language.
Oh, I am so angry right now.
Look, if we try and find logic in the Hollywood foreign press, you're not going to find it. We're not going to find it here.
Guys, it's...
I think this is legitimately rewarding and actually really important that Bong Joon-ho is getting nominated for both director and screenplay.
Yeah.
For this, even though it's not going into like the major categories, it's actually getting recognized as... I think it can be seen as a front runner for Best Picture out of getting these two awards. Getting them. It might get them.
Yeah, well, I mean,
nominated for something.
I mean, there has been so much love for Parasite right around the world, not just here in Australia, but in America, the UK, and its native South Korea. So, you know, they would have to be crazy not to acknowledge it at the Academy Awards. I mean, obviously, it's going to get that foreign film nomination.
It's going to win that. It's going to get absolutely nominated for Best Picture. And it's just whether or not Bong gets, like, individual recognition.
Yeah.
What are we thinking here? Who's winning Best Director?
I'm tossing up between Scorsese and Tarantino.
Don't ruin the day like that.
I'm sorry.
I'm thinking Scorsese. I think he's got this.
Well, I'm going with Parasite because it's the best movie of the year.
I'm hoping for your sake that Bong Joon-ho wins, but yes. I think Scorsese's got this.
No. I'm actually with Darcy. I want Bong Joon-ho to win.
Yes.
Yeah.
We're rallying
it. I don't think he will, but we want him to.
Then we've got Best Screenplay, Marriage Story, Parasite, The Two Popes, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, and The Irishman. Really good lineup again in terms of Best Screenplay.
This is they're all getting Oscar nominations.
I guess.
I don't know. Tarantino's won Best Screenplay in the past at the Oscars.
He has twice, I believe.
And Steve Zaillian for The Irishman is one of the best working screenwriters, so he's... He's standing around there as well.
So it's going to be a tough one, is what we can say.
Oh, yes.
Best Motion Picture, Foreign Language, The Farewell, Pain and Glory, Portrait of a Lady on Fire, Parasite, and Les Miserables.
I'm so happy that Portrait of a Lady on Fire can get recognition here because France didn't nominate it at the Oscars.
Didn't
they? They nominated Les Miserables instead, which I assume they didn't watch Portrait of a Lady on Fire because it is a much better film.
And the other thing would be... potentially that this sort of thing has been done before in France. I mean, Portrait with a Lady on Fire, and I had no idea walking into the cinema seeing this. It is a queer story.
Yeah.
And as was Blue was the Warmest Colour, and that also, they tried to push that towards the Oscars, and it didn't go well.
Yeah, okay. Mm. There's a lot of politics in the International Film Oscar. Yes. I do find it interesting that The Farewell has been nominated here, because I think Lulu Wang's being very vocal about this being an American film and being very important for it to be an American film, and here's... as a foreign language film.
And we've got Best Motion Picture for an animated film. So we've got Frozen 2, How to Train Your Dragon, The Hidden World, Missing Link, Toy Story 4, and The Lion King, which came out of nowhere.
So is Lion King animated? Is this?
Well, technically it is, because even though it's shot in like live-action settings, like all of the animals have been computer-generated.
So does that make it an animation?
That makes it an animation.
Everything about the film is animation apart from the first shot, from what I understand, from what Favreau said. The first shot is real.
So is CGI animation?
Yep.
Is that the understanding?
That is it.
So how much of Avengers Endgame is animated? Is that an animated film?
Parts of it are animated, but I think you've also got to consider that there's a lot of live action shots with real characters.
I think there's a fine line here between animation and CGI for The Lion King.
They actually did change the nomination process. I think it was back in 2009 for, you know, how to get nominated in an animation category, because Avatar technically was considered an animated film, and there was strong thoughts that they were going to nominate it in that category. Mm. And the American Academy said, nope, we're going to change this, so you can't do it anymore.
Yeah.
And it was for that reason that The Adventures of Tintin didn't get nominated, because most of its animation was done through motion capture.
So it'd be an interesting thing to think going forward with this category. Mm. Yeah.
What's winning here?
I think Toy Story.
Yeah, it would have to be Toy Story. It's a Pixar movie.
I'm saying Toy Story 4 as well. Yeah. Best original song for motion picture, Beautiful Ghosts in the film Cats.
Which is, they showed them a work in progress version of Cats, I think just to get Taylor Swift a nomination here. Because the movie is not done.
We'll see if she'll be present. She wasn't present for the Melbourne Cup, so we'll see what happens.
Oh, cold.
I'm going to Love Me Again from Rocketman, Into the Unknown from Frozen 2, Spirit from The Lion King, and Stand Up from Harriet.
Into the Unknown.
Into the Unknown?
Yep.
I think it's either Beyonce or Elton John winning this. Like, legitimately just because it's Beyonce. Like, the Spirit song is actually quite good, but I think it's because it's Elton John and Beyonce.
Could be it. Then we've got Best Original Score, Motion Picture, Motherless Brooklyn by Daniel... from Motherless Brooklyn, Daniel Pemberton?
Pemberton.
Little Woman, Alexandre Desplat, Joker, Hilda...
Gudnadottir.
Gudnadottir, 1917, Thomas Newman, and Marriage Story, Randy Newman.
Isn't that ironic?
Are they related?
Yeah, they're cousins.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, right, okay.
No, aren't they nephew and uncle?
Oh, maybe that is it.
Okay, but they
Randy Newman is quite a...
The main thing is they're related.
Yeah, they are.
Yeah. Who's winning?
This is a really good list. Like, I was actually listening to the Motherless Brooklyn soundtrack today, which is a pretty average to bad movie, but the score is actually quite good. It used a lot of really good jazz elements.
I've heard lots of good things about Motherless Brooklyn. Alexandre Desplat has won before in this category.
He's an icon
Very much an icon. Randy Newman, everybody loves him.
He's a national treasure.
I can't quite understand why everybody loves his music, but, you know, I'm a pleb, so...
He is delightful.
he's probably going to win.
I think it's either between him and Hilda, who I think is having one of the best years. She's actually almost going to win an EGOT this year, because she's won an Emmy for Chernobyl. She's most likely going to win maybe two Golden Globes for Joker and Chernobyl here.
What about Grammys?
That also been nominated for Chernobyl.
Yeah. Okay.
So, yeah, she... Yeah.
How about that?
And I think we've gotten through all the nominations, and it's taken up about 20 minutes, which is crazy. I knew it was going to take long. But I think that leads us to wrapping up with the show today. We've looked at I Lost My Body, The Addams Family, and obviously we've recapped the Golden Globes. We had a couple more news segments we were looking to talk about, but this has been breaking news in terms of the cinema.
Can we run through them very briefly?
We don't have the time, Tom.
Oh, damn
it. We don't have the time, unfortunately.
Hold it for next week.
Yes. We can hold it for next week. We can do our best of the last 2 weeks.
Okay.
Okay, and where can you find us, Tom?
You can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/film101syn, on Twitter at film101syn, and you can also contact us via email, film101syn@gmail.com. We love hearing your feedback. Please keep it coming.
And you've been listening to Film 101 on Sin.